this morning. Let's see, Albert and Andrew and Antoine Khaleesi. I see you. I'm gonna stop saying Khaleesi Game of Thrones. Even though House of the Dragon's coming out this summer. If you haven't watched House of the Dragon, it's like the coolest show ever. Denise out of Chicago, Tremania. Good to see you, Marcia. Let's see, Lisa and let's see, Wanda Henderson, Tony Gilliam, Dr. Vibe. Good morning, Dr. Vibe. Let's see, Levon from Kansas City, KCK, not Casey Moe. Ginger Garrett, good morning. Nellie Moore, Paige Brackett, Gwen Noble, Natasha Phoenix from Greenville, South Carolina. Tracy Lovely, good to see you. I hope you're having a lovely day. I'm sure you've heard that 1,000 times. Michael Wilson, good morning, Michael. Tony, good to see you, Tony. Kay Hitchcock, I didn't see Tony's last name. I'm sorry. Tarika, Kenyatta. Kenyatta is my daughter's middle name. That was the name of my brother who was stillborn. And it's funny, it's even though he was born stillborn and he didn't live, it's like I still have that brother. Isn't that crazy? Must be a spiritual thing. But anyway, but then again, that's what we do, right? We're conscious people. We operate on a high vibrational frequency, so we feel things spiritually. And so I've always felt my brother's presence, even though he did not get a chance to experience life with us. Let's see, Carolyn Powell, Chicago in the house. All right, Dr. Do you have any takes on the pending TikTok ban? I don't think the TikTok ban is surprising given that China bans all of our apps. Did y'all know that? If you go to China, you can't get Facebook. Your Facebook account will not work in China. Your YouTube account will not work in China. Google, you can't go to Google. You can't Google anything in China. China is very protective of their economy. So I'm not saying, I don't know what the incentive is here. But America is kind of interesting because America is a direct reminder of why I always reiterate to you guys that I'm not a hardcore capitalist. America's kind of for sale. America's always for sale. So people can infiltrate your country and your community with money. If everything that you are and everything that you have is for sale all the time, then people can control you with that. Do you understand? So other countries that want to control the United States just say, oh, Americans, they'll sell you pretty much anything. You come in with enough money, you can buy your way into whatever you want. And so let me just say this. The TikTok ban, is it going to go through? I don't know. In case you don't know, basically they're forcing the company ByteDance that owns TikTok to divest and to sell their stake in order to stay in the U.S., and whether it's an outright ban or not is debatable, but, there are states that have banned TikTok before, but it would always be overruled by a judge who would say this is unconstitutional. So it's still up in the air whether this experiment called the United States and this thing called the Constitution is really as brilliant as people make it out to be. Like, we make the Constitution out like it's this brilliant, unimpeachable document that is just perfectly written and has no flaws. And sometimes I wonder, are we a little bit too open? Like, even if you look at the open borders thing, where we just have millions of people coming in and we don't know who they are, and they ain't, and remember, they used to tell all of y'all that you had to get your shots, that you can't even go to your grandma's house without your shots. But then all these people coming in without their shots, and they're like, come on in. And I know why, because they're making money from this, but because you have a greater labor supply. But then it's kind of like interesting, because if you look at other countries, if you go study immigration policies from other countries, there aren't many countries that are as open as the U.S. I know somebody who tried to get into Denmark, right? And she had a baby with a man from Denmark and was married to the man she had the baby with. Denmark still did not let her into the country for about 6 or 7 years and had to jump through hoops. And then when she finally got into Denmark, they told her, they said, you can stay here as long as your kids are here, and you got to jump through all these hoops to prove that you're going to be a productive member of society. If you do not get a job, you cannot stay. You have to learn not just the language, but the customs and the history. And then if your children don't survive, like if you have a horrible incident, like your children are killed in a car crash, you have to leave. You got to go. We don't need you up in here. Right. So that was the experience that my friend had. So I said, that's very interesting that Other countries are they protect their stuff. That they don't let everybody just come in and take whatever they want. But we somehow have been led to believe that that makes sense, and I don't know if it does. And actually, in Powernomics, Dr. Claude Anderson's book, he pretty much explains that immigration policy has not been beneficial to the black community. That black people generally have not benefited from wide open borders and all that. He actually shows in his book Powernomics the history of immigration going back over 100 years, and shows how it was deliberately designed to dilute the percentage of black people in the population. There was a time where black people were more than a third of the population, and but at that time they set up the immigration policy. They and it basically was based on skin color for the most part. If you were white, you had an infinite supply. If you're from England, you could just the doors wide open. And then as it got browner, the numbers started dropping. And then when you got to like black, like Africa black, they were like zero. The immigration policy was zero. And this was true up until the 1960s. They said, we don't want any more black people. We got enough of y'all, right? So ultimately, those are just some interesting things about America and capitalism. And I think just from a financial consciousness standpoint, we could start the stream of consciousness there. And then I actually want to talk to you about estate planning for a minute. But just generally speaking, I want you to understand that America is good at making money, but they're good at making money in the same way that a prostitute is good at making money. And a lot of us would not look at a prostitute as some sort of model of success. But now, if you look at society, though, Kim Kardashian's right at the top of the pile in the success category for a lot of people because she makes a lot of money. But if you remember, she started off with, in some pretty interesting ways, right? That's how she got her start with, with a dirty tape, right? And then she kind of built off that, right? So, not to say she's a failure or anything. I mean, it's up to people to decide. But I don't know if I would necessarily be happy and proud if someone's like, yeah, your daughter became the next Kim Kardashian. Or if someone just said, hey, I can make your daughter the next Kim Kardashian, I would say, I don't know. I don't think I really want to do that, right? But of course, that's a personal decision. Maybe other people disagree. That's totally fine. All right. So let me hop into something that was on my mind today. And actually, what I'm gonna do is also I'm gonna send out a quick text alert to those of you that are on the text list. If you want to get reminders of when we do Money in the Morning, just text the word morning to 87948. Pull out your phone and do that really quick. Just text the word morning to 87948. And also, I'm doing an event on Tuesday. For those of you that want to get started with stock market investing, I have an event coming up called basically how to buy your first share of stock, but it's really stock market investing for beginners. So even if you've already bought your first share, if you're nervous about what to do next, or you want to understand how to kind of think about it, I'm gonna literally walk you through the process and show you exactly what to do. And what I'll do is I'll share that link with you today. And also, if you get on the text list, text the word morning to 87948. I'll send you a link to join. It's gonna be Tuesday at noon, this upcoming Tuesday. All right, so let's see here. All right, give me one second here. All right, so here's what was on my brain today. I was thinking about the singer Prince, and if you know Prince left, he left us with this amazing legacy of music, and he was super talented, and I mean the man was just absolutely prolific at what he did. And you can't ever take anything away from that. But also, if you remember, Prince had a lot of controversy financially because Prince died without any kind of a will and or estate plan, from what I understand. And because there was no will and there was no estate plan, there was basically a big hot stinky mess. He left a big old stinky, just nasty, gross, like make you want to vomit financial mess. And it was very sad because what happens with lawyers, and I got two of them, is that lawyers make their money when things get messy. They tend to profit when we don't prepare. A lack of preparation is a great way to give your money away to attorneys, from what I understand, or a lack of conflict resolution skill. Like if you can't get on the phone and resolve the issue with the other party, then guess what? Now you got to call lawyers, and then when lawyers come in, friendships end. You know, this person was your buddy for 10 years. Now you got to sue each other. Now you hate each other forever, and it sucks. Money can ruin everything, that's why I hate lawsuits and stuff, especially with people that I have a personal relationship with, because it's like, come on, let's just get on the phone. Like, if I got to give you some money to make you feel better or to make this easier, let's do that, right? Because it's very painful. It's emotionally draining. And actually, last night, D1, who is just this amazing international hip hop star, and he's also a teacher. He taught at Harvard, and now he's teaching at Tufts. He came in last night, and we did a fireside chat, private conversation, and that was one of the things he talked about extensively, was just sort of that journey of how he was able to make millions of dollars as an independent artist, and then some of the ups and downs of that, right? And one of the ups and downs is lawsuits and legal stuff, right? And this is something I think that's important to understand from a financial consciousness standpoint. Remember, when you build wealth, building wealth is important, but that's only a first step. It's the protection of wealth that also matters. And the sort of thing about the legal issues is how you protect your wealth. It's hard to protect your wealth if you don't think about liability and protection and insurance and all these other things, and when to file lawsuits and how to defend yourself from lawsuits and how to avoid lawsuits and all that. And so one of the things I'll tell you, just as a little trick, little piece of information to write down, is that if you have great conflict resolution skill, like, first and foremost, I think you should treat people fairly, have good contracts, things like that. But then also, I think conflict resolution ability is very important, because then you can avoid the fight, right? That means, look, if I just say, hey, let's just get on the phone, let's talk this out, and then also a willingness to compromise. I think ego, if you got too much ego, and oh, bark, 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 I'm not gonna let you, blah, 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 then next thing you know, you create chaos and war. War is not profitable. War will lose you money, not just in business, but in life in general. One great example is divorce. Has anybody ever seen how financially devastated people are when there's a divorce? I mean, they're just sad, so you've lost, and you didn't just lose money. You lost things that are more important than money. You lost years of your life. You lost your mental health, because you know you're crazy. I'm sorry, divorced people, y'all crazy. No, I mean, not to say you can't recover, right? But divorce, like marital problems, will stress you out at a level that you've never seen before, right? And I get it, and my heart goes out. I'm not making fun of you at all. I'm married, so I know that I feel your pain. But then again, I feel your joy too, right? Because I'm trying to make we want to stay on the bright side of the moon. We don't want to go to the dark side of the moon. But every marriage has the dark side of the moon, if you know what I'm saying, right? And so then on top of that, you have the whole financial devastation. Economically speaking, divorced couples or individuals who've been through divorce or breakup, broken families, just have lower wealth levels. Their ability to make money is lower. Their ability to protect the wealth they have is lower. They you're having a harder time fighting separately than you would have fighting as a collective, as a group. And so war is bad for your income. Wars tends to be bad for business. And then what's also true is that sometimes a lack of preparation financially can cause a war. You can cause a war. So let's circle back. I mean, let's circle back to this whole thing with Prince. If you ever want to make your relatives fight each other, hate each other, and destroy each other, and lose things that are more valuable than money, all you got to do is die with some assets, and don't leave any instructions on how to manage any of that. That's what you do. If you really want to just be a complete prick to the people you love, and you want your children like devastated, sad, depressed, angry, stressed out, going through hell, if you want to put your loved ones in living hell, here's what you do. Die with some assets, like a house and some cars and some clothes and jewelry and money in the bank, and then leave zero instructions on what to do when you're gone. Because if that's the case, then what's going to happen is that the people you love are all going to be at war. They're going to be like the Hatfields and McCoys. They're going to be gang banging. They're going to be doing drive-bys on each other. Your the sister and the brother are going to be trying to take each other out, and it's going to be a complete mess. That's what happens in a lot of families when there's wealth that's left, and you don't leave instructions. what those battles are, what those what wars sometimes are, is a void of leadership. Anybody remember the movie Soul Food? Tell me, how many of y'all watched the movie Soul Food? Give me a guess. I'm talking about the 90s version. I'm not talking about the TV show was good too, though, by the way. But how many of y'all saw the 90s version of Soul Food? Okay, it was a great movie, right? All right, so anybody remember like what Soul Food, like the premise of it was, besides the fact that we as black people love to get together. Like one of our little wonderful habits is we like to get together every Sunday and eat a bunch of food that's gonna kill us all by the age of 60. Right, but putting that to the side, but at least it tastes good. But the whole premise of Soul Food was let's get together at grandma's house every Sunday and have soul food. Okay, and so here's what I want you to think about with the movie Soul Food. Basically, and because I'm gonna give you some financial soul food, if you remember, Big Mama kind of held it all together, right? Big Mama was the matriarch. She was the leader of the family. She was the one that resolved conflicts and brought people together, and where they get together at grandma's house and eat soul food and make their problems go away and stuff. And then what happened when Big Mama got sick? Because Big Mama got sick, from all the soul food. I hate saying it, but it's true. And then when Big Mama got sick and then she died, what happened to the family? The family just fell apart. And the family, people started fighting each other. Conflicts w occurred and they weren't resolved. People were un undermining and sabotaging each other. And it just kind of became a mess. And so basically that those wars, those little battles that happened in the family, pretty much occurred because there was a void in leadership. There was no clarity on what to do next, who to defer to. There was no court, if you will. There was no court that everyone respected. And on a bigger scale, that's what's happening in the United States. So when Donald Trump becomes president and he says all the media is nothing but fake news, and then people on the right and the left are choosing just not to respect cherished American institutions anymore. And I think both sides are responsible for this, not just one or the other. Then that's what you have. You have back and forth, because you say, well, the New York Times says blah blah blah, and someone says, oh, the New York Times is fake news, or someone says, well, the president of the United States, you won the NCAA championship, we're supposed to go see the president, and the president happens to be Donald Trump. Well, I'm not going to see the president. I don't respect the presidency, right? And it just kind of becomes this thing where nobody respects anything. And so people just kind of fight, and there's just all these conflicts. So ultimately, when you pass, if you love the people that you supposedly love, if you love the people you love, I would encourage you. In fact, I would encourage you right now today, even if you don't have something in place, some sort of instructions or estate plan or something, maybe that can be like a little bit of a homework assignment I can give you. Just write like a little email or something to five people. Copy five people that you trust and just kind of at least give them a blueprint, because you might die tomorrow. I hate saying it, but you might die tomorrow. And I don't want to say it like that. I mean, it's true though. I might die. I might not be here tomorrow. So because death doesn't always make an appointment. Sometimes you take a nap and you just like don't wake up and you don't even know that it happened, but everybody else does. And then there's all this chaos that emerges because now they're trying to figure out how to break into your bank account to get access to your money because they got to pay the rent on Tuesday, right? This is the kind of stuff I've seen in real life. In fact, let me give you a real life example. When I went to Syracuse University, when I first joined the faculty of Syracuse, I remember there was a guy. Okay, so here's what happened. Okay, so I was, in case you don't know this, in my PhD program, I was hot stuff, man. I was like a number one draft pick or something. That's what I, because I was the only African American on the planet to get a PhD in finance in the year 2002. Not one, there was no male or female African American anywhere on earth that year coming out with that degree, right? So I'm hot stuff, getting recruited and all that. And so I wanted to go to Syracuse, because Syracuse was basically going to draft me early, so to speak, right? Almost like going to the NBA in your junior or sophomore year. And so instead of going to the formal market, Syracuse, they had a black dude there named Howard something, who was recruiting people like me. And he reached out to me and he said, "We can hire you before you even finish." That was great because at that time I was only making like $12,000 a year. And to go from $12,000 a year to $115,000 was like winning the lottery. And so I remember I talked to the people at Syracuse about me possibly teaching there. And I did my interview and it went really well. And there's a really great guy named Al who interviewed me. And Al was the department chair. And we had our interview. I went back home and I was thinking about whether or not I wanted to come to the school or not. And I remember Al called me and he said, we needed you before. Now we really need you." And I was like, "I don't know what that means, but okay, that sounds great. Everybody wants to be needed." And so, long story short, we ended up making a deal. Well, the reason that Al called me and said, "We need you now more than ever," is because there was a guy that was on the faculty that was about maybe in his mid-40s. And he was a very hardworking young scholar who was extremely productive and worked his butt off, similar to how I do. He worked all day, every day. And one day he wasn't feeling well, so he laid down to take a nap. And he did not wake up. He never woke up ever again. And so because he did not wake up, they suddenly had a void. Their basketball team was missing a player, and I was the guy. So they took his salary, gave it to me, brought me in, gave me his office, and so I moved into this office of this man who had literally died a couple of months before I arrived on campus. So I moved into this office. Now, pay attention. Now, here's what I learned from watching this experience. I'm 30 years old at this time, and again, young and excited about, all these possibilities and everything, and making money for the first time, doing cartwheels. I mean, you get that first big paycheck, you're just kind of excited. It's like crack. It's like the first. I never smoked crack or anything. And if I did, I probably wouldn't tell nobody. But I don't. Don't worry about it. But it really makes you high. Like you really have a financial high, right? So I'm feeling really good about my life at the time. But at the same time, I'm reflecting on the situation. I mean, and as I'm moving my office, I noticed that nobody really cleaned the office out completely. This guy, I don't know, I don't have his name in front of me, this poor guy. No one came in the office and cleaned out his stuff. It was like, all this work he'd put in, all this, the stuff he had that was so important. Like nobody, it wasn't important to anybody else. Like there were a million things happening. You know how it is in your life, how you have a million things happening that pretty much only you know about. Only you know how to connect all the dots. I got to talk to cousin Lucy and then go over and talk to the plumber and make sure I meet with the such and such maybe y'all got to go meet with the side chick or whatever. You got all these relations, all these things happening in your life, and only you have the yarn that can connect all these things. So nobody really thought, everybody's grieving him because he was a great guy and people loved him. But nobody thought, well, like, okay, let's go to his office and let's clean out all the files in his office. Nobody thought to do that. Why would you? Who cares? Now everything that you were working on is kind of, it's not important to anybody else but you a lot of times. And so all these projects, this man was working, he was a very productive scholar. He was working on probably 10 or 15 projects. He had open emails that he'd was he that he would email sequences where he's replying to people, half finished emails he was sending to people. And that made me really think about this, how sudden death is, right? How death, it doesn't make an appointment and it comes in and it literally amputates your future. It literally just clean chop, right? Just imagine somebody coming in and just chopping a big machine, just chopping your leg off without worrying about how it feels or it doesn't grind through your leg. It's just like chop. Like everything that you had going on, all the appointments you had, everything, all the dreams, hopes, everything you thought was going to happen next week, things you were worried about, ongoing battles you were having, loved ones that you're fighting with right now, all that's gone, done, over. Game is over. Bam, like a buzzer, like a basketball game. When they blow that whistle, game is over. I remember thinking about that and just how final that is, right? So I see all this man's stuff, And now, mind you, I'm 30. Don't judge me, but I was like, wow, all these emails are here, and he's talking to the people I'm working with. You know how you always kind of want to know how these white folks feel about you. I was really curious, like, okay, who really, which of my colleagues voted to hire me, and which ones didn't, and what kind of crap were they saying about me before I got hired? Because I know they didn't want to hire a black person because they had never done it before, right? And so I'm reading through all these different emails and just really thinking about this man's life and how all of his everything he had going on was just kind of there, and it was just like all this unfinished business. And I would say to you that I don't really know if you want to kind of leave the earth with just a whole bunch of unfinished business, right? I kind of think that spending some time really processing like what would happen if you weren't here can go a really long way, because if you don't, it can just get kind of messy. Now, in his case, it wasn't really messy, and I didn't really go through a lot of his files and stuff. I did read some of the emails, and they didn't say anything bad about me before they hired me. But I just seeing this man, a very productive man at 45 years old, and just see him just sort of gone like that, really made me think about death, and it made me think, oh, this stuff is serious. Like, it's real. Death is really real. And then my sister actually does autopsies, and she tells me stories all the time about healthy 32-year-old women who had a full life and all these plans, who just one day slip and fall down the steps, and next thing you know, they're in the morgue, and everything, it's like the end of the story for everything. So you don't know when your story's going to end. I think that's the point I want to get to. You don't know when your story's going to end. And a lot of you have lives where there are people that are dependent on you. There are people that look to you for leadership. There are people that depend on you, in other ways that go beyond money, financially and emotionally and otherwise. And I just really kind of think that, just as a tribute to them, I would encourage you, as a financial consciousness exercise, to meditate on how much they need you. And they don't just need you to be there for them. They need you to be there, even if you're not there. They need you to be there with them. I told my daughter, I say, I'm going to be here with you while I'm alive and after I'm gone. That's my goal. My goal is to be here with you, even if I drop tomorrow and I move on to heaven. Just know I'm watching from heaven. I'm connected. I'm right here. I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna be at every dance recital, every whatever, like every graduation. I'm still there, right? And so I would encourage you to really sort of process that, right? So that would be, again, because every morning we're doing financial consciousness exercises or et cetera. That's a financial consciousness exercise. Like, what does the world look like if I'm not here? What does the world look like if I die right now? Can they pay the mortgage if I died right now? Can they still get groceries if I die right now? Would they know where the passwords are if I died right now? What are the consequences? Do they have enough insurance? That's a basic one. That's a basic one. Again, we're not doing the GoFundMe funerals. We're not doing that. That's for suckers. We don't do that, right? And so when I think about Prince, for example, and I think about Aretha Franklin, and them just sort of dying without any sort of clear instructions on what to do with their assets. And I know that there's people will always, because people tend to love and really worship celebrities, they tend to make excuses. They either A, if you bring it up, they think that you're hating on them, which is just silly. I don't even use that. Like, that's like teenager language. You be hating, man. You be hating. I'm 52. I don't talk like that. But then the other thing is, or they'll make up some conspiracy theory where the white man did it, right? They'll somehow find some way to explain that Prince really had a will, but they snuck in his house and they stole the will and they destroyed it to make sure that they could go take all his stuff. No, you can make copies and send copies to your friends and put safe deposit boxes. He was great at making music. I'm sure he could have found some way to make sure that his will was well distributed, or his estate plan, or whatever it was, do well documented, so that Clive Davis couldn't go and sneak and steal his assets at a Diddy party. I mean, that's all that stuff is, I think, a little bit of a stretch. And I really think, at the end of the day, what's really going on in general is that a lot of times we are afraid to talk about death, Also, it's interesting that we almost act like it only happens to other people, and that's not true. It's going to happen to you. It's going to happen to you, and it's kind of sad to kind of think that way, but it's really beneficial in the sense that it's a great consciousness exercise to help you see the universe outside of yourself. I think we all a lot of us are kind of like little narcissists in a way. Like I think we a lot of us really, I'm gonna be honest with you, a lot of us really, we see the world through our lens. We act like nothing happened before we got here and that nothing's going to happen after we're gone. Like all that there is the year 2024, and there was no 1944, there was no 1908, there was no 1822, there was no 1750. It kind of was in theory, but it really didn't matter. What matters is right now, right? And I would just say that right now is just what it is. It's right now. This is your time. This is your moment. This is your chance to be here. And then you're gonna disappear. And then 300, 400 years later, I hate to say it, but no one's really going to remember that we were here. They're just not, right? So ultimately, I would say to you, you got to really find a process to process some of these issues that so many of us don't process. Don't get in the habit. And I think this is where culture and habits really get in the way. And I'm actually going to share a slide or two on this from my book, The Ten Commandments of Black Economic Power, because if you think about how much wealth gets lost and how much chaos gets created from a lack of planning, particularly upon someone's death, it's very scary. It's devastating. It's sad, and then you just think about just the, I know as a man, like I'm a proud man, I was raised by a strong Southern black man. We believe in having dignity and pride. And I just think I would just get embarrassed by the idea of my children having to go to church and to beg, for people to donate to a GoFundMe because I didn't make a plan. That's just not, that's not dignity. That's not good, And so really, I would encourage you to sit together as a family and just kind of lay out some of the basics, or maybe put together just a little email to get started, right? I know you want to do the formal estate plan and all that, and do that for sure, right? Get somebody that can really put it all together when you're ready. But at the very least, because you don't know if you're going to be here tomorrow, at least put something in, together that just says, okay, here, I got money here, here, and here. Here's some passwords, send it to your sister and your aunt and your spouse or whatever. And like for example, me and my wife, I just tell her, I say, look, babe, if anything ever happens to me, I know you're worried about me getting up and flying in airplanes all the time. If something happens and I get in a plane and it doesn't land properly and I don't make it back, just go to the black bag. The black bag doesn't have every single thing, but it does have, at least it has all the insurance policies, contact numbers, and general information that you would need to make sure that you and the kids are good. And it would make me feel better just knowing that if something did happen to me, the people that would cry at my funeral would be wiping their tears away with $100 bills because they would all be very rich as a result of the fact that I put some things in place. Okay. So let me let before I move on really quick, that here's the link if you guys want to join that first share that Stock Market for Beginners event on Tuesday. Let's see here. As you know, in the Black Business School, we're doing something every single week because we believe deeply in Black wealth and particularly wealth in a way that leads to a wealthy life, right? We care about also things like health, wealth, and relationships and how money connects to all these things. And also, I think that really challenging our culture is really important. And one thing that we want to stop doing is believing that the stock market is the devil. I want all of y'all invested in the stock market on some level. So here's a Stock Market for Beginners event that I'm doing on Tuesday. It's right there. The link is right there. Now, if you're a member of the Black Stock Market Program, you can join for free. That's theblackstockmarketprogram.com. You can do a $1 trial at theblackstockmarketprogram.com if that is your preference. If you would rather not join theblackstockmarketprogram.com, that's okay. You can join the event one day. I don't know the fee, but it's not very much, and it will change your life, and all the materials are yours for life. And also one membership you can bring your whole entire family. And I really want you to do that because I want everybody in your family to understand at least the basics of the stock market. Now, the mobile notary replay, I see that. That's what Andre C. Hatchett did yesterday. You know what? If you'd like to get a copy of that, email support at theblackbusinessschool.com. That's support at theblackbusinessschool.com. I think they're going to send out some sort of encore where you can check out the recording, but I'm not sure what the plan is. I haven't talked to Micah. Micah's the marketing director. And also, I'll be in Philadelphia on the 18th of May. Just a reminder, Jay Ortiz is hosting the Get Money Fest. And so I'm going to be a speaker at the Get Money Fest. So it's kind of like a big thing with art and hip hop and everything else. But they're incorporating a lot of financial literacy. And I love that. I love the idea of young people of all backgrounds, of all backgrounds, of all backgrounds, embracing economic basics so that you have a lot of options and a lot of moves you can make in your life. If you're trying to be free, you have to understand economics. If you don't understand economics, then in America, it's very, very hard to be free. The only way you could be free is if you get very lucky. That's it. If you get really lucky, somebody else creates freedom for you by giving you a bunch of money, then yeah, then you might be able to make it work. But even then, a lack of financial awareness and a lack of financial education and intelligence will cause you to lose all your money to people who understand economics better than you, right? So even those who are given lots of resources, if they don't understand the basics of good economic culture, they're going to lose pretty much everything they have. They say a fool and his money will soon part ways. And so not having financial literacy does not make you a fool, but you are a fool if you don't understand how important financial intelligence is and commit yourself to understanding economics on some sort of level. You have to have some development there. Okay. So the Get Money Fest, Jay Ortiz and a lot of his friends in Philadelphia, and I love Philadelphia. There's good people out there. It's May 18th. Oh, sorry, the URL is getmoneyfest.com. Getmoneyfest.com. Somebody please type that in the chat so everybody can see it. Getmoneyfest.com. And I like and D1 was here yesterday, and was a great person to have a fireside chat with because D is a guy who navigated through hip hop and is literally changing hip hop by basically walking away from the money. He understood early how the money is what distorted hip hop and bastardized it and turned it into the monstrosity that it's kind of become to this day. Think about this: when you see a rapper rapping about things that are clearly killing people, harming children, harming women, just in a way that embarrasses his family. The only thing that he can say to justify any of that is that it's the money. That's it. That if you take away the money, then none of it makes sense. You know, if you're rapping about killing other black people, the only thing they can't say, well, you know, it is really good to kill black people, like killing black people. That's what the Klan always did, and I want to continue the tradition of the KKK. They can't say that, right? So they're always going to turn to the money. If you go to the, if you go to the other thing, promoting drugs and alcohol, like there's nothing good about that. That's why that's pretty much illegal. It's all about the money. Disrespecting women, sexual irresponsibility, dealing drugs, all this other stuff. It's all about the money, the money, the money. And by the way, I know, let's see, someone says that you hurt my feelings when you talked about young people at the Get Money Fest. I'm 57. Well, I think that they said that anybody can come of any age, but I got a sense that because they are focused on like the music and the fashion and everything else and the financial literacy part, the economic panels at the Get Money Fest are just kind of an add-on to it. I thought I visualized something for people between the ages of like, I don't know, 28 and 38, that kind of thing. But honestly, I think any age works. I mean, I'll be in there and my wife, I don't know if my wife is coming and I got to check, but I know some people that are in their 40s and 50s that'll be there too. So, and also the fun part I think happens after the financial panel. So you could just come and just join the financial part and then leave, you know, when the rest happens. But it's all fun. Like I like watching to see what younger people are into because remember, this is the culture. This is the they're the future. And when the culture is just sloppy and bad and painful, it ends up harming not just your families, but also just, I mean, it just destroys the economics. And so I encourage anybody who's young to really embrace economics. No matter what you're doing, I can't think of anything you could be doing in your life where understanding money and having control and power over money is not going to make your life better. I just can't. Okay, so anyway, let's go back to this topic that I'd wanted to address in terms of Prince. And so we were talking about Prince not having a will, and this links to the Eighth Commandment in my book, The Ten Commandments of Black Economic Power, which, by the way, you can get a copy at drboycebooks.com if you'd like to get one. And so the Eighth Commandment is always plant seeds for the future. And this is actually going to link to the Ninth Commandment, which we'll get to in a minute. But let's talk about this really quickly. So we talk about planting seeds for the future. I'll give you an example. I was talking to one of my friends, and it was after college, and we were talking about what we were going to do next. And I said, "Are you going to grad school?" And she said, I like money too much to go to grad school." And she said, "So what are you going to do?" And I said, "I'm going to go to grad school." I said, "Because I like money too much not to go to grad school." And so basically, we both like money, right? But we had a different perspective. My perspective was a little more long term, hers was more short term. Nothing wrong with her perspective, but I think she ended up working in a shoe store or something, and maybe she was making $25,000 a year. My first job, I was making $115,000 a year. So even though I had not really learned, now back then, obviously, I wish I'd learned more about things like investing or selling stock options. If I'd known that when I was 18, I never would have worked for anybody ever. I would have just built a capital base and sold stock options and made a couple hundred thousand dollars a year doing that. But anyway, so just that one example really made me think about delayed gratification and how, if you think about it like this, think about something that we all understand. A concept called pleasure. Think about pleasure and comfort. Give me a yes in the chat if you agree. Give me a yes in the chat if you would agree with me that most of us like to be comfortable. How many of you, this is a consciousness exercise. This is where I ask simple questions to help us get to more, explore more complex ideas. How many of us enjoy comfort? And then also, how many of us enjoy pleasure? Don't lie. Come on, give me a yes. Pleasure's good. It's okay. Right? I'm not, it don't mean it's not satanic. Well, it could be, I guess, but it doesn't have to be. So we all enjoy comfort. We all enjoy pleasure. If that's the case, then why not just spend your whole life always seeking pleasure? Why not spend your whole life always being comfortable? Like I get up at 5 in the morning, I go to the gym. That ain't comfortable, man. There ain't nothing comfortable, especially in the winter. Do you ever dealt with wintertime in Chicago? Oh my God. Getting up at 5 in the morning in 5 degree weather and going to Planet Fitness, that is not my idea of a pleasurable morning. Pleasure is staying asleep, having whatever wonderful dream I want to have, and waking up fully rested. So why in the world? I mean, if I enjoy pleasure and I enjoy comfort, why would I do that? Well, for basic reasons, right? Because I know that if I make a sacrifice now, I can have more comfort and pleasure later on. Or another way to look at it is by sacrificing some comfort and pleasure now, investing that, right? Almost like investing money, I can actually avoid discomfort later when I'm 450 pounds, a 450 pound diabetic getting his foot cut off. This is a basic idea. It's a economist. This is similar to a concept in economics called income smoothing, where you just say, look, I don't need to have it all right now. I just want to kind of spread it out. Hey, so I don't live an uncomfortable life. I'm very comfortable in my life in the sense that, and when I say comfort, I'm not talking about fancy stuff like money and cars and all that. I'm not talking about that. That's material. I'm talking about just I'm comfortable and content. I love to look at the woman I'm married to. I like the house I live in. It's the little stuff. I know what my favorite shows are on Netflix. Every morning I get up and I get to talk to the most amazing people on the planet, intelligent black people. And I love that. I play video games. I do. It's fun. I don't care what age I am. It's just still fun. And so I'm comfortable a lot, but I don't want to be comfortable all the time. Right? I have pleasure. We all do. But I don't have pleasure all the time. Not just sitting around hitting the pleasure crack pipe all day. You're right. Well, why wouldn't I do that? You know, if something is pleasurable, why not just do it all day long? Well, think about it. Imagine in your head, you probably know somebody who does that. You know, like YOLO, you might as well, you only live once, do it. You know, and they believe that seeking pleasure and comfort all the time is the best way to live. And people like that don't tend to have, they, first of all, they don't tend to have long lives, and they don't tend to have good lives long term. They don't. Why? Well, because you smoked up all your, you hit the pleasure crack pipe so much that there's nothing left later on. You don't have, you didn't make any sacrifices or investments for the future. And also, even worse than that, because you gave yourself an excess supply of comfort and pleasure, there is no pleasure and comfort anymore in comfort and pleasure, if you know what I mean. Like, right, because this is the only way, really, what makes me enjoy ice cream, and this is a concept in economics they call satiation. Satiation, SATION. Sorry, SAT. Yeah, I can't even spell. SATIATION. Satiation. Y'all gotta forgive me. All right. So satiation basically means that if you keep on just doing, like, smoking the good stuff, if you will, if you know what I mean, then you're gonna not enjoy it anymore. The reason you enjoy ice cream is because you're not eating ice cream all the time every day. Ice cream is scarce. Ice cream is rare. Or even if you think about, you know, the fact that, like, how hip hop, on even on the female side, has just degraded itself to the point where it's just become this stripper rap or something. It's, you know, where sex is just thrown at you, just that they're just puking their sexuality onto you, rapping about whopping every other verse and everything else. It devalues, you know, it devalues the whole experience, right? It's like, it's okay, you know, now. You know, there was a time, if you think about it, you go back 40, 50 years, men, you know, they would pursue, they would serenade women to get access to the good stuff, if you know what I mean. And the women would say, oh, you know, let me think about it. You know, and men had to work for it, right? Oh, I got lucky today. Ooh, she gave me a kiss on the cheek, right? And now, you know, now it's like, you know, Cardi B selling coochie for $1.95 a pound, right? That's it. It's so it takes the fun away from it. It takes away the, you know, there's no thrill in the chase anymore, right? And I think that's true with anything that's good if it's an oversupply. If you, if in a more serious context, if you take something that's pleasurable and you just are dump, it's just dumped on you constantly, it loses its joy. You know, most drug addicts, for example, they talk about how great that first hit was, and but then eventually they become an addict. The drug doesn't give them a high anymore. They just need the drug in order to feel normal, right? They become addicted to it, but they're not getting joy from the drug anymore, right? So it's the scarcity of a thing that makes that thing valuable for you. In fact, diamonds, a lot of people don't know this, but diamonds actually are not that rare. Did y'all know that? Diamonds are pretty common, to the point where if you knew how common diamonds were, you wouldn't have, they wouldn't have much value for you. The reason diamonds still appear to be valuable to people is because De Beers and other companies, they deliberately restrict the supply of diamonds. They hide the diamonds. They're like, no, we don't want to give them too much, because you give them too much, they're not going to value what they get. That's just what it is. So where am I going with this? Well, if you go back to the original premise of comfort and pleasure, I remember when I was 19 and I thought about life, and I thought about how many of my friends said that I didn't have enough fun. And some of these were friends that would they would smoke and drink a lot, and they would go to a lot of parties, and they would just always be having fun. And I still have fun, but I also work very, very hard. And I remember just explaining that the reason I work hard now is so I can have fun later. I understood. I said, when I was at 21, I said, or 19, whatever, I said, if I work really hard for the next 3 or 4 years, I can have fun And when I'm 25, when I'm 35, when I'm 45, when I'm 55, and when I'm 65. But when you are seeking pleasure all the time, right now, you're going to have a lot of pleasure now, but you're going to have a really hard time at 25, at 35, at 45, at 55, at 65, because you're going to have to get up every day and do a job that you hate because you didn't make any sacrifices to put yourself in a better position. So this kind of balancing, I think, is extremely important. It connects to that eighth commandment about planting seeds for the future for yourself and for other people. It talks about just that income smoothing concept. It talks about understanding things like satiation. You know, we were talking about satiation. Like, look, enjoy your life. Oh, I'm a big believer in finding comfort and joy and in all the little things in life. If you don't have joy, then I want you to find it, right? That means sometimes joy might just come from taking more naps. You know, every morning I get up and I drink a ton of water and I make sure I get a lot of sleep because I found out, I said, you know, when I sleep a lot, I feel better about the world. When I'm grumpy and tired, everything sucks. I don't like life when I'm sleepy, right? And then I also found out how lack of sleep is connected to things like Alzheimer's and all that, you know. And so a lot of times we tell us, I think one guy had a platform called Sleep is for Suckers, and I said, don't say that. That's not true. Like you should sleep. Because you can still, as long as you're using your time productively when you're awake, you can get plenty of sleep. Just cut the silly stuff out so it doesn't waste your time. Like I sleep, I take two, three naps a day if I have to. But when I'm awake, oh, I'm on it. I don't mess around. I don't sit and have worthless, goofy conversations. I turn my phone off. I don't get sit up here and just get into social media back and forth that doesn't add up to anything. No, I turn off all my notifications. So if you're trolling me on Twitter, just know your trolling is being almost completely ignored unless I happen to see it and I want to have some fun and I just want to clown you with a goofy emoji of a monkey or something just to say how stupid you are. But then I keep it moving. So it's not about taking time to rest and recharge and make sure that you are comfortable and happy in your life. It's really about being focused when it's time to really focus. And focused people, they get stuff done. They spend time on the things that actually matter. And I believe a lot of people waste a lot of time on things that are not going to get them to their goal. Figure out what your goal is. You know, be that guided missile. And it's something you have to reiterate every day. If you don't recharge that battery every single morning, have a process to almost like fine-tune the laser, then you're gonna find that it starts to oscillate and it never goes away. No matter, even if you are on top of your game and you're 40, 50 years old, doesn't matter. You always have to sort of recalibrate. So every morning I get up, first thing I did this morning, I drank my water. I thought about who I am and what I want to be, and I meditated on the porch. I sat and took in fresh air and thought about how I'm going to kick ass today, and that's my process, right? So what is your process? How do you get your missile back on target? And make sure you have that so that you can achieve your goals, because life is short. Life is short. Now that gets us back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of planting seeds for the future. I think that when you talk about pleasure and comfort, everybody loves it. The reason we invest is because we really want to have pleasure and we really want to be comfortable later on in life, right? But then also investing involves a part where your consciousness has to have an awareness that goes beyond you and your pleasure and your comfort. And you have to think about, how do I create that pleasure and comfort for others? Well, that's where things like the estate planning process comes into play. I love Prince. I really do. I think he was great as an artist. I think he was great as an activist and a human being. Most people I know who know Prince, I know Prince's god sister, and they all speak very highly of him as a person. But where he failed, what if it's true that he did not make an estate plan, this was a very bad economic decision because people who he does not even know probably made $100 million off of the fact that he did not have a plan. When you don't have a plan for your finances, then someone else with a better plan will come along and take all your money. Do you know that there are estate planning attorneys who literally fund their entire office off of families that don't make a plan? They literally, they if everybody suddenly started making sure that they had good estate plans, a lot of these offices would actually go out of business. There are a lot, there are a lot of them that just say, well, people don't prepare. So when they're not prepared, they call in us as the cleanup crew, and we have to resolve all the disputes. And we end up taking just a ton of money and fees. And the thing is that the consequences tend to be bigger than just money, though. You get to the point where there's a lot of emotional damage that gets done. People that feel failed, that, gosh, daddy didn't make a plan for me. Now I'm out here struggling. Now I'm out here in corporate slavery. I'm slaving on this damn job because my daddy was a dummy. My daddy didn't have a plan. He wasn't a real man. He didn't think about the future. My mother thought she was going to live forever, or she was so scared to talk about death that she didn't leave any instructions. She didn't leave any recall. We have no idea what to do. So now me and my siblings aren't even talking anymore. We're already dealing with the sadness that mom about mama dying, but now I don't even have my siblings anymore because we're all fighting over mama's money because mama, for whatever reason, Jesus told her not to talk about death, and she didn't talk about it, even though mama's blood pressure is sky high, she got heart problems, she got all these diabetes, all these other issues, but for whatever reason, she didn't want to talk about death. So now we are in the middle of a big pile of crap. Thanks, mama. And if I made you feel bad, I am sorry. I cannot, because you don't feel as bad as your loved ones will feel when, because you didn't do your damn job. So if I made you feel bad, then good. Because your kids are gonna feel worse. Your loved ones will feel worse. The people you feel you leave behind, they're gonna feel worse than you feel right now having to hear me say this. And the only and so I will say this, maybe God sent me to get in your face and say, just do something, make some kind of a plan, write the damn email. Okay, here's where the money's at. Here's what, just make sure that make sure you let Sissy control the estate because she's a, you can just do little things like even some anything, just say something so that they have something to lean on, right? I mean, process again. I'm not telling you, this is not legal advice. I am not an attorney. I'm not an estate planning expert. I will bring one into the black business. Well, I know we've been talking about, I'm gonna get on that, okay? So see, think about this, right? Even I'm sitting here saying, look, I'm gonna get to it, I promise. We all do it. We all procrastinate. Even I do it all the time. I'm trying not to. So maybe by me talking to you, me yelling at you, maybe that's me yelling at myself. Because even I have some stuff where I'm like, dang, boys, you got to really get to this, man. You're not going to be here forever. So because here's the thing, right? If even if I leave a little email with the things I want or a short little video, hey, I just want to record this video on the phone and send it to five of y'all just to make sure that in case something happens to me, here's what I want. Blah, 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 blah. Well, then a lot of people in the family will respect that. They're gonna say, okay, well, that's grandma. Grandma's saying what she wants. And y'all know we all agree that grandma really wants it this way. And then all the kids get on the same page. Cause like, well, and then if someone tries to get off the page, they say, well, look, grandma said it on the video. Okay. Right? Do you see what I mean? But if grandma didn't say it, then there's a debate. Well, grandma, I think that what she would have wanted is well, no, I think what she would have. It's a problem. It becomes a mess, it becomes a fight. I'll give you two examples that will help you understand the gravity of this. I know one lady I remember meeting who told me that she went through the devastation of her mother dying young or in her 40s or maybe early 50s of cancer, and the stress of the death caused problems in her relationship with her father because her mother was the one who kept that relationship together in the first place. So she and her father stopped speaking right after her mother died. So it wasn't just her mother that died, it was also her father and the relationship with her father. And so she lost both her parents at the same time. And this was 5 years after the fact when this happened. And this wasn't even just the financial side. This was just how the pain and the stress of losing somebody, if it's not properly processed in the right way, can cause damage that goes far beyond just the actual initial event itself. Now, here's a more financial example. And I'll get to you guys about the estate planning stuff in the Black Business School very soon. Give me a week. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm gonna put we have a few couple things in place, and I'll find that as well. So another example was there was a guy who was early 50s. And you know, sometimes we 50-something-year-old men, we trick ourselves into believing that we're going to be young forever, and that age ain't nothing but a number, and it's just, you know, a state of mind. And so he had a little bit of money, so he was a young player even in his early 50s. So he had this 32-year-old girlfriend, and of course, you know, the trade was kind of the standard one. I date a hot young thing, and then I provide financially for her, and that's kind of what the arrangement was. And I think that they really cared about each other. I don't think anybody was using anybody, but it was like that. We've seen this before. So this guy has this girlfriend. Now she's 31, 32 years old. This about the same age as his daughter. So you can imagine the tension between this young lady and the daughter, who's like, "Why are you dating my daddy? We're the same age, right?" Like, I think they could have went to high school together. So the daughter had an issue with the girlfriend, but the girl didn't matter. She didn't care. They just went on with their little relationship. So the young girl lived with the guy, and the guy also took care of his mother. Why? Well, because he was in what they call, financially, they call this the sandwich generation. The sandwich generation is when you're in your like 40s and 50s, and you have aging parents that you're taking care of, and then you also have maybe kids that you're taking care of. And in this case, he didn't have a kid, but he had a young girlfriend, which is kind of like having a kid, I imagine, for him, right? Because he paid all the bills. So they're all living happily in the house, him, his mother, and his girlfriend. He's paying all the bills. He's being the man. He's doing his thing. Well, one day, unfortunately, even though he, in his mind, was committed to being a 25-year-old, his body did not agree. So his body decides, okay, this is when I'm going to do to you what I did to Kevin Samuels, and that high blood pressure that you've been neglecting, I'm going to go ahead and go ahead and tax you on that high blood pressure. So he has a stroke. Right? He has a stroke, and he doesn't die right away. He goes into a coma. So when he is in this coma from the stroke, the mother and the girlfriend start to panic. They panic because they say, "Oh my God, he told us he was going to be here forever, but that's not happening. He's actually sick, and he's not quite dead, but he's not available, and we got bills to pay." So what the mother and the girlfriend plotted to do was, they said, "We got to get in his phone so we can get in his bank account to get access to the money so we can pay the bills, because this is what he would have wanted," which is probably true. He probably would have wanted to pay the bills because he'd been paying all the bills. So why wouldn't he want to pay the bills now? But he can't because he's in a stroke. Nobody can speak for him, right? So they take the phone. I think they maybe do the face ID, and they put it up to his face, and they break into the phone. They get into the bank account, and they transfer out, you know, $50,000, $60,000 so they can make sure all the bills are paid. Again, theoretically, it obviously it's wrong and it's illegal, but theoretically, you know, it's like, again, this is what he would have wanted, so maybe that was the moral justification. So they do all this. Well, then boom, one day he just flatlines. He's gone. You know, beep, right? Gone, done, time's up, game over, whistle blown. We can't go back now. He's never coming back. So now it becomes a crime. It was a crime already, but now it's really a crime. Because now he's dead. Now all these outside entities step in to his estate because he has no estate plan, no will, no nothing, right? Because the courts don't recognize the girlfriend. They don't recognize that you were the ride or die. They don't recognize that you loved him as if he were your husband. Pretend play husbands, that's not recognized in court the way real husbands are. It's just two different categories. Or like, I was the wifey. You add the extra Y. Why would you even think that that would even work? Wifeys have no legal rights. A wife does. Just in case you did not know. So wifey is now a criminal. She's now gonna be on the run because now they're going into his assets. And guess who is his direct beneficiary? Because he made no plan. He left the leadership void. So guess who gets all his stuff? The daughter! So the daughter who hates you, who thinks you old nasty ass, raggedy ass, gold digging slut for dating her daddy, who is old enough to be your daddy, it finds out, she goes into the account, finds out that y'all went in there and took $60,000, $70,000 out of his account. Oh, she's coming for that whole entire ass. So the daughter calls the sheriff. Says arrest these two women, grandma too. That's kind of vicious, but she was pretty angry. And and also, and by the way, evict them because the house is now mine. And and that's how the story ended. Now the daughter has all the daddy stuff. The wifey, maybe she found someone else to depend on, or maybe she's still in jail. I have no idea. And I don't know what happened to the mama. I hope that they reconcile. She reconciled because you can't. I mean, she's a granddaughter. You can't do that to your grandma, right? But the point of the matter is to say that if he'd made a simple plan, any plan at all, I mean, really, if this was his life and he, cared about this person, these people, he would have put something together legally to make sure that they were going to be okay. And also, if they'd had a little bit of foresight. Again, this is economic vision. People, economic vision, part of economic vision is the ability to see the what ifs. I told you all, we live in a three-dimensional world. The fourth dimension is time, the ability to see what's in front of you and what's behind you. Most people can't even do that. They can't see what's in front of them. The fifth dimension is where you don't just see what's in front of you and what's behind you. You don't see what just you don't only see what's going to happen and what did happen. You see what could happen and what could have happened, right? So you're looking at all the possibilities. And that's what insurance is. Insurance is nothing but fifth dimensional thinking. It's saying, what are all the things that can happen? And how do we try to prepare for those things as best as we can? Most people don't live there. Smart financial thinkers do. So here's what I'm saying. Look, I wouldn't tell if I was this young lady's friend, the girlfriend, the young 32-year-old, because I think she really loved the guy. Really, she, I think they, I mean, like they had a long-term relationship. It wasn't no like flingy type stuff. I would have told her, I would have said, well, if you love this man and you're really connected to him and you're dependent on him financially, what are your legal rights? And then after having a financial consciousness exercise and a reflection, she'd probably conclude the obvious, which is, well, I have none. Well, then I would say, well, why don't you get some? And she would say, well, I don't want to get, we don't want to get married because he doesn't, he want to be a, he want, whatever. He doesn't, he doesn't really want to get, he's already been married, whatever. Okay, fine. But I would say, well, you could still get legal rights. You know that you don't have to be his wife to have legal rights. You do know that you can do contracts very easily. AI, you can ask ChatGPT to write you a contract if you want to, right? Get something in writing, something on paper to just make sure that you're going to be okay in the event that he's not okay, in the event that life starts lifing on you and things change. Because one thing that happens is like once you kind of go through that door of death, you don't come back, right? You can't come back and fix it. So I would say to you, think about all these things, and maybe again, a good financial consciousness exercise would be number one. I told you, write that email. If you don't have enough in place, just at least put the email in place until you can get everything else. Do everything else, but start with just maybe that email or the video or something. Communicate, communicate, communicate. And then number two, just sit on the porch one day and spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and imagine yourself gone right now. Imagine if you died right now. Not next week after you get it all together. I'm talking about right this minute. And then try to walk through your life and the lives of people you care about as if you're not there and see where the holes are. Okay, oh, wait, so the rent's due next week. Well, I'm the one who pays the rent. Okay, so I got to make sure they know how to get into the bank account. Oh, I got to give so-and-so a ride to whatever, or I take care of my mother. Well, gosh, who would do that? Who's gonna make sure that that happens? And do we have enough resources for that? Whatever it is that's important for you. Okay, so because you don't want to be, this stuff about people dying without estate plans and wills, that stuff makes my head hurt. It's crazy to me. It's like this crazy tradition. This is why, this is again, I reiterate, this is why in the book, The Ten Commandments of Black Economic Power, this is why I wrote so much about culture, because I started thinking about how many cultural habits we have that are just so bad, but we don't question them. We don't even process them because that's what we're just used to doing. We're used to Black people not being prepared. We're used to us not being informed. We're used to us not having a plan. I don't want to live like that no more. I don't want to do that. So let's end that now, at least in this space, at least in this room. Okay. All right. I hope this was helpful to you. I hope this conversation was beneficial. And And I know I've talked for an hour and 9 minutes, so that's longer than I planned to go. And so thank you all for hanging out with me. Thank you for listening. By the way, if you want to get a copy of Dr. Claude Anderson's book, Powernomics, we do have copies of Powernomics in our bookstore. You can go to drboycebooks.com. We also added a new apparel line with a lot of really cool t-shirts and stuff, so and coffee mugs. So if you want to show your love for the Black Business School and rep your financial literacy growth, feel free to go check out the apparel at drboycebooks.com. And last but not least, if you want to receive notifications when we go live in the morning or when we do our financial consciousness training, just text the word morning to 87948. And if you text morning to 87948, I'll also send you an invitation to the event on Tuesday, with Stock Market for Beginners. And so have a good day, everybody. God bless you. Thank you so much for hanging out and listening to me. And I will see you all tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. So take care. Talk to you soon. Love you.